Well, we can go and get started. It is 6:31 now. Okay. So, main reason for this is just to have a discussion. So, if there's any questions on what the propositions are and what we're trying to do for the GO bonds, we can have that dialogue back and forth. Just to kind of go over real quick with the propositions. Proposition one is for the school. So, basically, trying to get some money. And it would be kind of the base money that we're trying to go after for some grant money from the state as well. But trying to do the roofing and the siding for the high school, middle school, and then if there's money that we get extra to also hit the elementary as well. So that's the main basis for it, is we're trying to protect the interior of the school so that the siding needs to be done, the roof needs to be done. So we're trying to protect the inside of that building. So that's the reason for the school. And then proposition two is an $8.5 million general obligation bond, and that is for the public safety building. Issues we have with the public safety building, roof needs a new roof, it needs new siding. The siding's so gone that it's actually starting to do damage to the interior of the building itself. So some of the walls we've had to actually go up and shore up in the past. There's some rot on the inside. So we need to redo the siding, and we need to do the interior of some of the walls themselves, and we need to replace the roof. So trying to start with the structure on the shell outside, and then there's also some mechanical issues that we want to try to get addressed as well. The buildings are 37 years old, so a lot of the mechanical systems that we have inside, we just can't find parts for them anymore. A lot of it is obsolete on the inside. So the HVAC systems, the controls for the HVAC systems, we just can't get parts for it. So regardless, we need to change out the inside, change out the HVAC systems, change out the controls, and then the same thing with some of the fire alarm systems that are inside. Like I said, it's 37 years old and just hard to find some of the spare parts for that anymore. And then the third thing that we can talk about as well, and I don't see it on here, but is the mill property and what to do with the mill property. So we have it on there to grant the city and the borough permission to either lease or sell the mill property. It's because the value of the total property is over $1 million, that has to go before the public to have a vote. And we went ahead and put it on this one. We don't know what's gonna happen with the property. There's no plans for any of it, but we need to get it before the people to vote on it, which allows us to start planning for it and go before, you know, if we do it, we'd like to get an economic development committee together so that we can all have a discussion on what's gonna be the best use for that property out there. No decisions have been made at all as far as what that property is gonna be used for. The whole goal is, I mean, it's the people's property. So the whole goal of that, the economic development discussion is to figure out what the best use is gonna be long-term for the property and for the city and borough of Wrangell. So that's the reason for it. So if you want to talk about details, or do we want to do questions, or how to just do questions?
Yeah, we want to do some details, and then we can kind of do a Q&A at the end.
Sure.
So I think everybody has an agenda. Hi, I'm Mason. I'm the finance director for the borough. You guys just want to do intros real quick while we're up?
Sure, I probably should have done that.
Nobody knows who this is.
Yeah. Jeff Good, city and borough manager.
Amber Alhadad, capital facilities director.
Tammy Stromberg, business manager for Wrangell Public Schools.
Josh Blackley, maintenance director for the Wrangell Public Schools.
And we also got some assembly members in the audience, so thank you all for being here, as well as some directors. So appreciate you guys all being here, members of the school and the school board. So,
you're going to have to talk louder.
That sounds good. So thank you for being here.
I guess I should have got some mics.
How about we scoot all the tables up?
I know, right? I appreciate you guys being here. We got lots of different members from school board, the borough assembly, directors of the borough. So thank you. And really just want to kind of highlight some of the bond fundamentals and kind of the proposals overview, specifically as it relates to propositions one and two. I don't really have a lot to say about proposition three. It's really not my bag, so Jeff can elaborate more on that if you have any questions. The biggest thing is that this isn't some big pitch. It's not a promotional. I don't want to be known as the bond guy. I'm not the bond guy. This is just a informative discussion. If I was known as the bond guy, it might be a tough sell at the grocery store. But I'm here to kind of just offer the information and give you guys the tools you guys need to vote. We're presenting a solution, and you guys get to decide if it's really the right one. Little context on debt. The borough typically doesn't hold any debt. Right now, we got about $250,000 in revenue bonds. And so revenue bonds are essentially debt that's related to, that's paid for by user fees. So they're usually housed in an enterprise fund. So that would be our water, our electric, our sewer, our sanitation utilities, or the harbor. Right now, we have a little bit of a water and a sewer revenue bond. We're asking tonight for general obligation bonds. So those are debt that's related to governmental activities. So these are basic functions of government that don't have a specific revenue stream related to pay them off. So general obligation bonds are typically paid for through property tax, which you will see as a proportion of the mill rate. So that's kind of what we're asking for tonight is a general obligation bond. As I said, the last real general obligation bond issuance the borough did was back in 2010 for a school playground. So, and maybe a little bit more elaborate history is that it's very typical for communities to bond reoccurringly, but we haven't had to in the borough's history because the state has funded or subsidized a lot of our big capital asset purchases or infrastructure over the last big, you know, few decades. So, and we had some good times and bad times throughout the state, but in those capital purchases, there was huge subsidization by the state. So now that's not necessarily around in a lot of facets. We do have ISJA funding that we're trying to target, but that's not really applicable for some of these modes. So just a little context there. You think about variables when you think of bonds. We don't know I can't tell you the exact debt service because I don't know the interest rate when it's going to be sold on market. We can give you an idea what it's going to be at. We know it's going to be really close to 4%, but I can't tell you exactly verbatim this is your debt service. So there's a little bit of estimating involved. I can tell you the term. It's going to be two 20-year bonds, one for 3.5 and one for 8.5 million, respectively. I can't tell you what your assessment's going to be. I don't know what the assessment's going to be until our third-party assessment team assesses your home. What we do know is that Jeff and I are making a pretty big push to make assessments accurate this year so the assembly can drop the mill rate proportionally. So Wrangell's assessments are very behind the curve. It's pretty very evident. So I can't tell you what it'll be, but I know that the assembly's committed, the current assembly's committed, which has a lot of carryover into the next assembly, to reducing the mill rate proportionally. And then timeline, so these bonds, if one or either of the bonds pass, essentially they'll go to issue on the on the primary market at Wall Street, usually around the January to March timeline. The Alaska Municipal Bond Bank will pool our bonds together with a bunch of other communities and railroads, utilities. So we might join with like Petersburg and Fairbanks, and they'll sell them on Wall Street. We'll get the proceeds around May, and then that's kind of when we start going to work. So I'm going to speak a little bit more about the public safety building bond, and then I'm going to let Tammy kind of talk about the strategy with the school bond, if that works. So Proposition 2 is the $8.5 million general obligation bond for the public safety building. So this has a $627,000 estimated annual debt service. Like Jeff said, it's aimed at replacing and repairing the structural components of the public safety building, so the siding, any rotten framing, the roof, the internal gutters that need to be removed. And Amber will talk about the deficiencies in the engineering that building has faced, you know, since inception. So a lot of flaws in the building, so trying to correct those and preserve the building for another 20 years. This would require an estimated 8.5% increase to property taxes. So whatever your property tax bill is, you can probably guess that that's what it's going to be. But with all those variables in play, it's really hard to tell you exactly what your property tax bill will be. And then when Tammy talks about the school bond debt, there's no tax impact to the Wrangell tax base on that. That'll be completely covered through SRS excess reserves that we can confidently say that it should be covered for years to come. So I'll let Tammy talk a bit about the school bond, $3.5 million. And then I was gonna kick it to Amber and Josh to talk about the current status of the buildings and then what the projects would actually, you know, on a detailed level cover. So this is Tammy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, it'd be better for everybody to, for what you're doing right there, if they have questions right
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
and then, because some people might forget what they were wanting to ask.
Yeah, that'd be good. And we want to talk, we'll stick to the public safety building bond just for us a little bit more. Do you want to talk about the status of?
Yes.
And then we'll just cover off on the public safety building, and then we'll move to the school if that works.
Well, I have a question.
Right okay, now. Yeah, that's fine.
You're talking about the school bond not having no debt to the tax services at all.
Right.
Can you more elaborate on that? And why are we going to a bond if we have no, is it we don't have the money, and that's why we're going to a bond, and then the SRS is just going to pay it off through the years? Is that what you're talking about?
No, that's a great question. So the school bonds, any public debt offering requires approval of the voters and the assembly. So regardless of if we have the money or not, it still requires a vote of the people. We don't have the upfront money to take care of the school. So we don't have the $3.5 million just to go out and spend it right away. It's a governmental activity. Our general fund, that would be half of our general fund reserve, basically. So it really deflates our ability to address other projects. So it's, and debt, you know, right now is a useful tool. Money's cheap still, even though the interest rates are rising. Corporate and municipal debt is fairly cheap for us to issue. So it's strategically in our favor to do so. But what I'm saying is that the Wrangell tax base isn't responsible or should not be responsible for those debt service payments, because we have the ability to fund that through the Secure Rural Schools revenue stream, which was $1.1 million this last year. You know, we roughly retain half of that each year after funding the contribution to the school district for operations. And we have a $2.3 million reserve in SRS alone. So it behooves us to take out the debt. It levers us a little bit, but it's cheap money, and we can do it now in bulk. So, and possibly leverage DCIP major maintenance.
Explain to the public what SRS is.
So yeah, SRS
why
is.
Why it was established.
Yeah, SRS is the Secure Rural Schools Fund. And so it's funded through national forest receipts or national timber receipts. It's a really old program, early 1900s that it came out with. And it was aimed towards providing funding for rural schools and roads and infrastructure. So Wrangell fits that bill. It's been a continuation, and it's been refurbished over time. But essentially, historically, the borough has funded, used those funds that we receive from the state for a lot of specific reasons. We use it for the school. We use it for paying off the 2010 debt. We use it for school and road maintenance. So SRS is a really useful tool. It's pretty freed up, so it's not like there's a lot of restrictions on our Title I payments, which are for school and road maintenance. So we can pretty much spend it on an umbrella of things, but it's really been a traditional source for us to fund the school district and maintenance projects. So that's kind of a little bit about SRS.
This is really a general question, you know, as a public, you know, people looking at, okay, we're in a huge inflation, go buy a gallon of milk, okay, and so we're all thinking, okay, what's our bottom line going to be if we vote for this at home?
Sure.
Right? Okay, so we're going through a property assessment thing, which, well, like you say, it's very, very old, so our property will probably be valued higher. We've been watching houses get sold at a higher rate. There's now the mill rate. There was something like the, if your property goes up, the mill rate for your house goes down. Can you explain all of that?
Sure. So they're actually independent variables. So assessments operate independent of what the assembly does with the mill rate. So theoretically, the assembly could say, yeah, we're going to keep it right where it is, and our property tax revenue would basically be exacerbated by the amount of assessments that went up. So mill rate times assessment equals property tax bill, which most people, I think, understand that. But the assembly's got to stay committed to saying we're not going to overcharge the public for these two debt services. So essentially, this is what we need. We need the 8.5% to be able to meet our obligations in the future comfortably and sustainably. So if your assessment's $100,000 and it goes up to $200,000, well, essentially, and that happened for pretty much everybody, well, the mill rate would just drop in half proportionally if everything was supposed to stay the same. So that's what the assembly would do to keep things the same. Well, what they'll probably do is, and what my recommendation is to match, no matter where assessments come out, to increase the property tax revenue 8.5% to cover this debt. So hopefully that answers your question. There's just there's a lot of variables, but yeah.
The debt for the public safety building.
Public safety building, yeah.
Okay.
The school district does not require any increase to property taxes or any burden to taxpayers, so yeah.
So my question would be, is increasing the mill rate the only option here? It would seem to me that that's somewhat of an inequitable tax, so to speak, because not everybody in town owns property.
Sure.
So you're putting that burden on those who've chosen to invest in the community itself by living here and owning property.
Sure.
I'm just wondering and curious if the option of increasing the sales tax in town by a penny, say, has been discussed by the borough, by the city administration and such, because it would seem to me that that is an across the board tax on everyone who lives in Wrangell.
Sure.
And then it is a more equitable source of tax income, so to
and
speak.
And out of town money too.
Exactly, all the visitors that come to town, every dollar that's spent, put another penny in the account.
Right.
And so I'm just curious as if that has been discussed in depth by the assembly, by the borough administration. And if so, could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something we did consider. The main thing with sales tax is most of it's spoken for. So 80% goes towards our general fund currently, and 20% goes towards the school district for operations. So most of it's spoken for. An increase could be considered. You could target specific things in a sales tax hike. You could lift the cap. There's an abundance of things you could do. And I guess I'll say, nothing set in stone until the budget cycle, and when the assembly sets the mill rate, they set the budget and how we're actually funding these. This is just the proposed and estimated way of doing it. Currently, it's an 8.5% increase from the property taxes. It's excess revenue from a jail contract we received, so $195,000 extra we see for the jail contract, and then the permanent fund in the amount of $281,000. So really, we're subsidizing this debt issue, or this annual debt, by $476,000 a year out of the total $627,000. So only $151,000 is to be expected to be covered by the property taxpayer. But I understand your concern. I think that's a great point, and I know there's some assembly members here listening to it. So, and like I said, there's nothing set in stone until budget cycle.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, great point.
Can you answer his question? Has the assembly discussed this before?
We did discuss it in April, March. Did we talk about sales tax? I remember we did a sales tax overhaul. That was one of the points, was lifting the cap potentially to do things like this. It wasn't specifically targeted towards the debt service for these bonds, but it's something that can be considered too if these things pass, or even if one passes. It's something we can kind of solidify through the application process with the bond bank and how we're going to fund these and publish the budget. So.
And explain to the public about going after remote seller sales tax from remote sellers and how much we've realized from that.
Yeah, so remote seller sales tax is basically, it's our Alaska Municipal League has created a corporation that essentially collects taxes on our behalf. It says that sales tax doesn't have boundaries. So if something's sold down in Wyoming, Wrangell resident purchases something from Wyoming, we receive sales tax money for that. And so that's actually remitted to the borough. So online sales, Amazon, those kind of things are remitted to us each month. And so we started off at like $5,000 for the first time around, and now we're up to $250,000, which is a huge, huge bump. And you know, we went from 2.7, 2.6 million budgeted in sales tax revenue to 3.5 this last year, which is pretty remarkable. Of course, the cost of goods and services went up drastically through that time frame, but that's why sales tax went up and our obligations are more. But yeah, that's a great point. It's certainly helping us. Needless to say, I think there's lots of different mechanisms to fund this thing. We're just trying to give you guys the best estimate we possibly can of what this is going to cost you guys, and being honest why we're doing it. So I think 8.5% pretty attractive overall. I mean, in terms of assessed $100,000 assessed value per home, that's $112 per property tax bill, roughly. $200,000, $224 extra. That's kind of the best estimate I can give you guys. Please, yeah.
When you say you guys, you guys, do you mean the property owners?
Property owners, yeah.
You guys are?
Yeah, Wrangell property owners.
Property owners, not everyone that lives in Wrangell.
That's correct, yeah, Wrangell property owners.
Okay.
So, and I should say, this estimate's compiled based on in-service folks, so that's gonna extend from anybody that's right here in town out to 13 Mile.
Anyone who owns property?
Yep, anybody that owns property in service on Wrangell, so.
The borough.
The borough.
All of the borough.
The borough. So, yeah, those are good questions.
Well, right, the borough extends beyond 13 Mile, so.
It does, so there's two service networks, there's in-service and there's out-of-service. So you guys are probably most commonly familiar with the 12.75 mill rate. That's everything from, you know, 0 Mile right here in town to 13 Mile. And then we have Zrambo, Myerschuck, Farm Island, Wrangell Island East, certain things that are certain places that have a 4 mill rate because they don't use the services of the town as much or drastically. So they were given a different mill rate back in the day and we've stuck to that. So it would be for the assembly to decide how they wanted to increase the mill rate or decrease it and then increase it enough to cover property taxes. Can you speak it up a little bit?
When you're referring to services, the difference of the two areas are the services. What services are you?
Yeah, so I mean, the basic functions of government, so those are gonna be education, so the school district, it's gonna be fire, police, you know, housing for the court system, basic functions of government, library, the Parks and Rec, the Nolan Center, those are all considered governmental activities in our budget. So anything essentially that's outside of the realm of our utilities, our enterprise funds, would be considered a governmental activity and funded by that. So that's a great question.
So at 13 Mile, will I pay less than someone at 6 Mile?
You do not. That's my understanding is your mill rate would be 12.75.
But I don't get water and sewer.
That's correct. Yeah, that's something to consider. Yeah, that's certainly something to consider. But
water and sewer is covered by user fee, which people out off of the grid for water and sewer don't pay.
It's under, that's under the enterprise funds. So the enterprise funds are funded separately through user fees. So it's not part of this rate that most people pay.
So what you're telling me is that that fee that's added to your monthly bill, your electric bill, those fees cover the water and sewer?
Electric bill covers electric. Like each one of our utilities, it's its own separate entity. So it's its own enterprise fund. So each one of those has to operate independently of each other, and they have to fund themselves. So that's kind of how they're set up.
Okay,
but
back to my question.
Yes.
I take care of buildings in town too, so I look at those bills, and there's a water bill on that in town that I don't have out of my place. Mm-hmm. Does that water bill cover the cost of providing the water in town to people who are billed for it?
Yeah. So like activities would be funded through those user fees. So your water bill would exactly cover the public works folks that are actually delivering your water to you, they're treating it, the infrastructure to your residents, those kind of things. So, and same with the sewer and electric utilities, those are truly business activities, so they operate as their own kind of bubble. They're truly their own business, because what we don't want to happen, get in the habit of is, wow, our water utility is really not paying for it. Now we're gonna start covering it through property tax bills. Right. So
that's exactly where I was going.
Right. Right, and so that's a good question. But currently we're not in that position, which is great. They're sustainable right now and healthy as enterprise funds, so.
So kind of in relation to my last question, if the proposition passes and the citizens say, okay, go ahead and do this, borrow the money, is the proposed ways to pay back that money, so as we know, we've already talked about the property taxes and sales taxes. Is that set in stone, or is that still a matter in flux that can be adjusted after the bond proposition has been approved?
Absolutely, it has to be adjusted, really. So nothing's set in stone until we pass the budget and the assembly sets the mill rate and assessments come through. So there's a lot of different variables. And so
in addressing that debt service, we can still change entirely how we do that. This is just our best estimate and trying to be transparent with voters on what we would expect that, you know, to cover.
So if in fact it passes and the assembly takes it upon themselves to discuss these sales tax increase, that could then limit the amount that you would be having to raise the mill rate.
That's true.
It would offset, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Somewhat.
Thank you.
Yes.
I think one thing we need to point out that the bond rate right now is as good as it's going to get for a long time. So this is an opportune time to be issuing a bond.
It is. That's a great point, Anne. I appreciate you bringing that up. I mean, you think about your 30-year mortgage rate. Like, I locked in at my house a month ago for 5%. It's already at 7.5 in some areas. And rates, they go together. Corporate municipal debt, it's quite a bit lower than we look at it with a 30-year mortgage. But the Fed has acknowledged that the rates are continuing to be, they're going to be continued to be hiked by 75 basis points, which is a lot. So if we don't act now, it's just going to be a more expensive process the next time around. And it doesn't mean that we can't finance these sort of things through other modes if they come up. If we find out that there is a green energy grant that we can paint this public safety building as a net carbon zero grant, we get it, we can still pay off that debt with you know, moving the money around essentially. So there's no prepayment clauses. So if there's other revenue sources that come in throughout the time or the life of the bond, we can still subsidize or pay that off through those mechanisms. So, that's kind of a commitment on administration side, is we're not gonna stop looking for external sources of funding just because we get the $8.5 million from the voters.
A great example of that is the playground, the elementary school playground. So back in 2010, the community approved a bond proposition for the playground, around $1 million, with the idea that the mill rate would be increased to cover the debt service on that. In the end, we were able to get a deed, Department of Education, CIP grant for that project, and so the mill rate didn't change based on that project. So, you know, that's a prime example of exactly what Mason's talking about, ways to pay that debt back without impacting the community.
And tell the public our efforts at trying to find grants to rehab the public safety building, and because we put everything under one roof, which was very economical and sounded very sensible, we've essentially been penalized because all the grants go for fire and public safety other than what we have under that roof. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Jennifer,
sure, I'll go for it. So
and speak up.
Yes, can you hear me now? Patty's exactly correct. So there, you know, there's a myriad of grant opportunities out there, and we research as many of them as we can to fit the need of all of our projects. It's really hard sometimes to marry up the project with the objective of the specific grant. And the public safety building is the one that we've had the hardest time with, primarily because there's not a lot of grant funds for community facilities. That's one place where state and federal agencies are just lacking offering grants for those type projects. The one thing that they do offer in that regard, though, is fire departments. So they will replace there's several grants out there that will replace fire departments. And we've gone after a couple of those. One of them, you know, we tried to delineate the fire department within the public safety building and ask for just that portion of the building, which is more than a third of the building, to be covered, trying to offset our costs for the rest of the building. It didn't fly. The agency didn't, we didn't receive a high score just based on the fact that it was combined with the rest of the law enforcement building. There's very little money out there for law enforcement as far as facilities go. A lot of money out there for training and equipment and whatnot, but as far as the public facility to house those type of agencies, the funding's just not been there to date. So does that...
Would that be eligible for funding through the Infrastructure Act?
We're looking at those, but again, we've scoured those. And Jeff brought up a good idea that there could be some building efficiency grants out there, and A lot of the first phase that I'll describe to you in a little bit, the first phase work that we're proposing under this $8.5 million project could likely be considered building efficiency related. So we're going to look at that also.
I think a lot of it comes back to Ann's point too, is like the interest rates are going to be the best they are for probably the next 3 to 5 years. So this kind of gives us the money up front, and then as these modes or these other programs come out through agencies, we're definitely going to apply for them, and we could certainly pay back our obligations that way too. So this kind of gives us just a starting point to at least push forward and not just put a Band-Aid on the problem or not just acknowledge it at all. And so, yeah, so it's just, I think it's a step probably in a good direction. Yeah, Mr. Wilson?
Has consideration been to get bond funding to separate the buildings, build a separate new public safety building? What would that cost? And then separate, and if some of the other, that the present building, separate and become a fire department only.
Yeah, that has been looked at. Jeff, you want to talk about that?
We did, and that was when we started looking at different bonding options or the different grants that are out there. First thing we considered is how we maximize it. Can we split these facilities into different facilities? The problem we have is that the cost of doing that, you're almost doubling the cost to do it because it's two separate buildings and then you're building a new building. So we talked about building just a separate building for our police and for the court systems, for DMV, and for the jail, moving that to a separate location and then taking out the portion that we don't need for the other building and just making a fire department. The problem is the cost, instead of it being a, you know, $12 million project or $15 million project, it jumps to a $31 million project, which we can't afford. Even if we got the grant money to help us with the fire department, that still doesn't help us cover the new cost of a build, you know, of a new police department and a jail and courthouse and
yeah, very expensive.
So what is the cost of the what percentage is added on for cost overruns?
The public safety building? I'd be happy to share this. This has been made public already. So our first phase that we're considering here with the $8.5 million project, the purpose of it is to return the building, basically the exterior of the building, to its original integral state. We have primarily a problem that stems from the flat roofs on that building. The parapet walls associated with that section of the building was identified through a condition assessment to have been poorly constructed in the beginning, and water has been infiltrating the exterior of those walls since its inception. So the walls are rotten. The structural framing, they're gigantic glue line beams that form the structural integrity of that building, and they're rotten. They're rotten so bad that the floor joists and the roof joists that bear on those, the ends of those joists are also now rotting. We had to erect a shoring wall on the backside of the building underneath the court system to shore up that section of the cantilevered portion of the building just to prevent a catastrophic failure of it. So significant critical infrastructure problems with that building. That's the primary one. And what's happened with the rot in those exterior walls is the entire wall has to be replaced from the exterior, from the outside siding all the way into the drywall on the inside, because of the nature of the way that exterior walls are constructed when you tear them out at that level. So this project includes all of the exterior replacement, including doors and windows, and also converting those flat roofs to a sloped roof. So restructuring the flat roof to a sloped roof to eliminate any future problem with flat roofs. Also includes replacing the fire alarm system. That system is obsolete. And while the system still works and our last inspection shows it good, there are problems with the power supply and some devices have been shown to be slow to respond. So we still have issues. The fire marshal has reviewed all of that every year to ensure that our system is operating. But it needs to be replaced. It's old, and these systems just aren't made to last forever. and again, obsolete parts. So, you know, when we do have failures, it's becoming harder and harder to find those parts to replace them. The other major part of this project would replace the internal temperature controls. Right now, our temperature controls are a pneumatic process, which means that the heat is delivered through tubes of air. That tubing is failing. There's leaks in it. We also don't have automated control of that system. So it's a manual control, and that building fluctuates very easily when the temperature changes from morning to night. So our staff is there constantly all day long, adjusting temperature to fit the needs of the tenants inside of there. I can't tell you how many times a day at certain times of the year we're getting calls from the various agency staff in that building saying, it's too hot. We adjust the temperature, and then they go, oh, it's too cold. And it's a finicky system, and it's not, you know, not like the nice digital controls that we have nowadays. And it doesn't automate through the evening also. So that would be a big improvement, would be replacing those pneumatic controls with the digital controls that we're replacing now through most of our buildings. And then we've got construction escalation. We've applied a 48-month escalation, assuming a 2024-year construction. And with our general contractors overhead, bonds, and construction contingencies, we're at a $7 million project. We've added 12% for architectural and engineering design, and another 12% for the construction administration inspection to get our $8.5 million project. So those are the details for the project that we're identifying here. That doesn't address any of the issues with the interior of the building. There are ADA issues. You know, if we wanted to bring the building up to current ADA compliance, there's other interior facade deficiencies, you know, drywall cracking, flooring that's old and needs to be replaced. And, you know, it's just an old building. And we want it to be a safe and good environment for everybody who's working in there, and then the public who's using the services. And I'll just remind you all of all the services in that building. That building houses the police department, our jail, the fire department, the Department of Motor Vehicles, TSA, U.S. Border Patrol, the State of Alaska Child Services, the State of Alaska Courthouse, and our indoor shooting range. So there's a lot that's going on in that building. A lot of services for this community. Yes?
It's probably a silly question, but I got to ask it. Have you guys looked at demolition and just rebuilding it?
Okay. I've got those numbers if you'd like to see it.
You could build a building, maybe a different design, for $8.5 million?
No. The numbers aren't adding up, but it's much higher. So we looked at a couple of options. I'll give you, if those of you who haven't been following. We looked at a number of different options. One, renovating this building in full with all of the needs that have been identified in the condition assessment as deficiencies. We're looking at, you know, $16 million plus. And that's based on 2 years ago costs. We looked at renovating the old hospital, but we quickly realized that it was going to be much equal to or as much as building a brand new building. So why renovate a 50-year-old building for that expense, right? We looked at, we got a probable cost for constructing new. We considered both the building whole as it is in kind for the services. We also looked at separating the fire department, as we discussed earlier, to try to obtain funding for a portion of our need and then figure out how to pay for the rest. We're looking at, for those options, close to $30 to $35 million. And that's, you know, that was the estimate that came to us at the end of 2020. Yes, Mr. Wilson.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, but
right.
The question I have is, which building is in worse shape? And if you put the $8.5 million instead towards the old hospital instead of the public safety, I mean, that's plenty to house all the public safety, and then you'd have a separate building for the fire department.
Yeah, I can tackle that one. So the hospital was designed for a hospital. The police department's designed for a jail And it's completely different code requirements for the two. And there's a ton of structural issues and internal issues with Yale Hospital. I mean, there's a reason why Search built the new hospital and didn't take the existing one. It's because the renovation costs of doing that, and that building was built in phases, so it's different construction throughout the entire building. So trying to renovate that one would far exceed just building, that would be my last option, would be to renovate that building and do it. I'd rather demo it and build new than try to renovate that one. It's just got so many different issues, so many different code issues with it, that it would be really expensive to try to do that option. We definitely looked at it. We had engineers in there to look at it to try to figure out if it was an option. It's just way too expensive to do it. And you're still left with a really old building at the end.
And that was one of the options that we looked at for reconstruction, was demolishing the old Rangel Medical Center building and reconstructing at that site.
So that was my original question.
What's the bottom line on the cost of, I mean, the dollar to do what all that stuff you're going to do to the building, and what percent of that or has been added on for cost overrun?
We have a 10% contingency built in.
Okay. We don't want to get there and then go, oh my gosh.
So to be honest with you, this is a probable cost that an engineer put together, you know, based on replacing in kind, based on square footage numbers, right? Really not until we get into a fully designed project that they can put actual numbers to. But 10% is normal, 10%. Sometimes in a renovation project, you might put a little bit more just because it's a little bit trickier, right? You run into unforeseen problems, unexpected. But 10% is average once you get to a point where you've got a solid design. Would you add anything to that, Jeff?
So, it's been 2 years since then.
Yeah. So, proposition number two is a public safety building. Phase one.
Correct.
Only.
Correct.
So any subsequent phases that would need to be done, will they also require a different general obligation bond and potential mill rate increase for those phases as well?
You know, it depends on how we want to tackle the rest of the building.
And this is something that's being discussed, and I assume you guys are all professionals, you know how to do your jobs, has been discussed and is something that is in your purview right now.
Correct. We've looked at phase one. What's the critical need to keep this building in good standing, right? The rest of it could wait. The rest of it could be piecemealed. It could be paid for, you know, in portion throughout, you know, a number of years as we can afford it. Or we could decide to seek a grant or some other type of funding, whether it be a grant or loan or a bond. We've not made any decisions about how subsequent phases would be addressed, but those are some options that could be done. But phase one is the critical stuff. It's the most critical that needs to be done now.
And you kind of have to evaluate what phase one, like what can be absorbed by the tax base, what's not too much, what's not too little, because if we go for too little of amount, then you're not using economies of scale at your benefit. So, you know, it would be a lot better just to take a not piecemeal it. That way all the travel and the mobilization costs, they're all covered in one bit rather than flying, you know, 10 different contractors up here to keep working on this building. So that's something that's considered too.
Yeah, and
to ask your architects is perhaps we could go with horizontal siding as opposed to vertical. We are in a rainforest. So.
A lot of changes we would make on the siding and the roofing and the type of material we're using for a new building. It definitely wouldn't look like it does now, for sure.
And the same on the vertical siding would apply to the to the school.
Correct. The whole intent of this one is, like, right now, the longer we go, the more damage it's being done to it. So it's to stop the progressive damage that's being done, get us back to a baseline, and then, as Amber said, we can then look at some of the other things, and we may be able to do just a room here and a room there over each year and just kind of chip away at the inside, because those aren't critical. Exterior, we're every year it goes by, we're doing more damage to that building by not doing anything. So it's to stop the bleeding, essentially.
Okay. So phase one, take care of all those issues that are structural and everything, so that phase two, I mean, if you put together a timeline so that phase two, what degrades in phase two doesn't negate what you're doing in phase one now?
Right. Yeah, the exterior is the exterior. So the rest of it is all interior cosmetic. A lot of it's mostly cosmetic, and as Amber mentioned, it's ADA compliant and that kind of stuff. So it's your flooring, it's your drywall, it's fixtures, it's just getting it. I mean, it's just if you did a rehab on the interior house to make it look modern, right?
So it's, all the structural is getting done in phase one.
Correct.
Yeah, and the life of the bond is really supposed to mirror the life of the extended life of the building. So if we do a 20-year bond, we're projecting that these rehabilitations will extend the life of the building by 20 years. So that's kind of...
It's be the life of whatever, like most siding is 30 to 40-year siding.
Right.
Most of your roofing should be 30 to 40-year roofing. And our building's 37 years old, and nothing's ever been done to the roof, and it's a flat roof sections, which they don't fare well here, and with interior drainage. So it's a 37-year-old building. No siding has been redone. No roofing's been redone. It's been patched over the years, but it's time.
Concealed internal gutters on the eaves, which have created problems, and there are structural issues based on rot from those leaking. Yes, ma'am.
I apologize, I missed this probably already, but how did it get this way in the first place? How did the problem be ignored for X amount of years by the city, but the property taxes that have been paid by property owners for all these years, that this damage has been just let, and it sounds like prevention or maintenance hasn't been done to get to some of these situations. Some of it is poor design, as you pointed out. But how did we get to this point? We're talking $8.5 million and more from property taxpayers who have already paid property taxes, thinking that maintenance was being done or their tax dollars was going to these things.
I appreciate that question. So the most critical part of the deterioration of this building are those exterior walls. Not until we had planned to do a siding project on that building did we discover that the problem was much deeper than just the siding needing to be replaced. So it was something that we were unaware of until we actually did a building assessment, poked holes and tore flashing off and really dug in to see. We realized that something else was going on. And actually what brought that to our attention was the appearance of carpenter ants. So they made their way to a visible state. And then we also said, something's going on. Something, we need to explore this.
And tell them how long ago that was.
2016. Yeah, so we've been working on this and deliberating, you know, about what to do for a long time. Because it's so expensive to do anything. But it's a problem, and it's not going to get any better.
And part of the problem, too, which made it even harder to identify, is most of your drainage systems are interior to the building. So unless you're seeing it actually come through the wall and where you can identify it, unless you're doing destructive testing to actually come in and cut holes and look inside, unless you see it actually coming through, you're not typically going to go through and do that. But I guess part of it too, to kind of answer your question, one thing we are doing is we're kind of looking at a reassessment of how we're doing our building inspections overall, so that moving forward, I mean, with this building here, for instance, we're doing maintenance. Like we have a roof project where we're going to redo and touch up the roof. So we're keeping up with it. We're going to do biennial inspections on all of our buildings, so that we're going through each building every other year and doing a thorough inspection. So that's what we're trying to develop now, trying to get ahead of stuff, and trying to build out a plan long-term so that we hopefully won't end up in a situation like this in the future. So that's our goal.
The other thing we've done, to piggyback on that, is we've purchased software that allows us to now have an automated preventive maintenance program. So, you know, all of the systems have been put into that database. And we've populated you know, the frequency of checking, you know, the variety of systems in that building, so we don't miss those critical pieces.
Yeah, those are all really good questions. I don't want to short the school too, so the school bond, so I'm going to let Tammy and Josh speak a bit to the school patiently. So these are the $3.5 million bonds. This is against Tammy, she's the business manager at the school district, and then Josh Flashley, maintenance specialist director at the school district. So I'll let you guys stand for a little bit.
Thank you. Hi. The $3.5 million bond issue for the school district would be a local match for a $10 million total project. It would try to leverage $6.5 million from state funds from the DEED Major Maintenance CIP grant project. There's no guarantee that we would get the funding, but this is the only source of state funding that we have available right now. So it behooves us to try to do our best to get the funding. It would be a project that encompasses as many deficiencies as possible in the building project. The more that you do it once, the cheaper it is. So if you bring one construction crew in to do one job rather than do it in five different jobs, it's a cheaper job to do because you get volume pricing on materials. You pay for travel once in and out for your crew. This would be a project that would take probably two construction seasons if we get all the funding that we would like to have. But it is very competitive. So basically what that means is we have to get condition surveys that would be professionally done so that we can score really high on the major maintenance list. So that means bringing in engineers, architects, all the five disciplines to get a job done correctly. Now that wouldn't be just a benefit for one-time use, that would be a benefit to the school district and the city going forward, because that would provide the basis for several years for other DEED major maintenance CIP grant applications, if our first applications in the first couple of years weren't successful. The other thing we have to have is a good grant application. So you are going against, in this project, all the big municipalities and all the little municipalities in the state. So you have to have your application very well prepared. And then on top of that, you have to have the legislature appropriate the money. So there is no guarantee that this is a project that will work from a standpoint of getting $6.5 million, but it's the best shot we have at leveraging in $6.5 million to the community. So it's our best shot, we should take it. It's not gonna get any cheaper. As the borough indicated, interest rates are not going to go down. They're about as good as they're gonna be for right now. And there are a number of things that are deficient with the building. Right now we have at least $5.7 million of deficiencies, of building components that are beyond their useful life. So those are things that are basically running on borrowed time. And the more that we can get done at once, the cheaper it will be to get it done. And I'll let Josh talk some about what those components might be.
Okay. Certainly. How do you do that? I'm learning a lot as you're talking about what this means. Okay, so we're gonna go and vote and hopefully maybe pass a bond to improve the school, right? And now I'm understanding that you have a grant, the city, the people would be responsible for 35% and the rest of it we would get through grant. What if you don't get the grant? What happens to this vote? Do we still pay the 35%? And you do some of the job?
We would, if we weren't successful in our bid to get a state major maintenance grant, we would have to spend the money within a certain period of time. So right now we estimate that we would have two opportunities to get a grant, at which point we would have to go ahead and spend the money due to IRS guidelines. But once that was done, we may have the chance to recoup some of the money through the school bond indebtedness program. That's the other program that schools can seek funding for school projects. There's currently a moratorium on that specific program, but it's going to be lifted in 2025 under current legislation. There was an attempt to lift it in the last legislative session. And there are some very big municipalities that are very interested in taking advantage of this program because it helps their bottom line as well. So you're looking at Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau that would like to see this program reopened, basically. So it will be lifted at some point. We don't know exactly when. It would require a retroactive provision in the legislation if it did come to fruition. But that was also included in the last legislative session. So it didn't pass and it died on the floor, but it will be lifted at some point.
Okay. And I just know I asked the question completely wrong. Okay. Let me try again. Okay. I'm talking about going to the poll, and I think what I'm voting for is one way or the other, we would be responsible for 35% of this project, the value of this project. Okay, we're hoping we get a grant where we're not responsible for that, but if we don't get the grant, does it come out of our pocket?
It would still be part of the city's budget.
So the city's budget.
I mean, is that money you already have, or is that money you're going to get through additional taxes?
So can I comment on that again? So that's going to be the SRS funds that we talked about, so the Secure Rural Schools funds would be the best mode for that. So those are the National Forest receipts we receive from the Forest Service. And so it's not coming directly from taxpayers, would be the recommendation of administration to the Assembly. Certainly, it could be funded by any source of general governmental revenue, but that's the most viable candidate because it's currently freed up. We don't use the total contribution from the Forest Service to fund the school currently. So we're actually in a position where we're building that fund up so we can essentially do projects of this nature. And I think to answer your question, that 3.5 regardless is going to get spent on maintenance and major maintenance. It might be narrowed down versus the $10 million project when we lever in the deed CIP $6.5 million. But regardless, we're going to do $3.5 million of work if it passes.
Okay.
Not on the backs of taxpayers for property taxes.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Yeah.
I'll speak a little bit about the maintenance that has been done in the schools before. We have had CIP grants awarded to us in the past, in 2003 and 2006, and back as far as 1999. Roughly every 10 years, we have been getting some money and putting into the schools. And I think what we have done or been able to accomplish by getting those grants and putting some money into the schools is the schools are in a little bit better shape than the public safety building. It was built at the same time, but we have been doing maintenance on them throughout. But they are still old buildings. Some of the roofs have been replaced, but some of them are already 6 years past their lifespan. And if we continue to put them off with just maintenance on them, we're gonna have to replace them sooner or later. There are a lot of things that are past their lifespan that you can see. The siding is 11 years past lifespan on the high school. There's a lot of things you can't see. And without a condition survey done on it, there's a lot of things that I don't know what is wrong with it necessarily, other than it says it's old. But the numbers that Amber had on some of the components in the public safety building, the condition survey was able to identify those, and I think that is the first step to getting this project going. If during those condition surveys, they say, you know, for $3 million we can replace all the roads, well then maybe that is where the $3 million goes if we don't get awarded the grant.
I would also say that Josh and I, if the bond passes, Josh and I would be recommending to our school board that the school district fund the condition surveys out of its major maintenance fund. So that's money that wouldn't hit the borough pocketbook anymore at all. And having done that, that would also contribute to our local contribution and bumped up the cost of the price tag of the total project that we could pursue with the state money included. So this is very much a all hands on deck sort of project.
And condition surveys aren't cheap, so it's just a good demonstration of a partnership that we're trying to embark on.
And we're very grateful to the borough for all the work that they put in on the bond. We really appreciate the effort the administration and the assembly has put into it.
Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Those are all, yeah, please. These are really good questions.
I'm not asking these questions, many of them for myself.
Yeah.
But I have talked to community members, and, you know, this is, the write-up is, okay, what's going on here? Anyway, okay, you know, the final sentence in the description of what's going on for the schools is, the borough can absorb this level of debt service without requiring an increase, and it doesn't say increase in what, to calendar year 2023 property taxes. And I imagine that's the mill rate, okay? The increase you're talking about. What happens after 2023?
So the reason it's phrased like that, so it actually doesn't refer directly to the mill rate. It's talking about property tax revenue as a whole. So in calendar year 22, or fiscal year 22, it was $1.78 million in property tax revenue, right? So I'm saying that essentially in that last paragraph, we need to increase it up to the level of the debt service. So that's what that's for. It's not referring specifically to the mill rate. And then what was your second part of your question?
What happens after 2023?
Essentially, that this would have to be matched to sustain. So the reason it says 2023 is that's the most immediate fiscal year, and assessments have to come in first. So that's what, essentially, once assessments come in, that's the level that we would increase it and hopefully sustain it for the life of the bond. But there's so many variables at play that I can't project what 2024 or 2025 property tax levels are going to be, just based off of a variety of variables.
She's asking about the SRS money.
Yeah, we don't.
Oh, you're talking about
23, but she says, what happens after the year 2023?
Are you talking about SRS then?
Either way. So I mean, how are we going to pay for this after 2023?
Yeah, no, that's great. So.
Yeah.
As you know, and it was a great contribution in the back, is there's lots of different mechanisms of funding this. I'm just presenting the most viable option to the assembly, what makes sense. Secure rural schools is something that's been around for a long time. Could they sunset it and never do it again? It's possible, but we have enough in reserves to be able to confidently say we can sustainably fund this through SRS or the reserve of that fund. So that's the school. Property taxes are property taxes. Like, the borough's never going to not collect property taxes. It's just a way of funding our general governmental services. So what the assembly is going to do if this bond passes is the right way to do it would just be increase it by that 8.5% to get that $151,000 in property tax revenue additional we need to sustain the debt service for the next 20 years.
You're talking about the public safety building, you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about both now because right. We kind of talked about the SRS and so. At the school bond is SRS, no burden on the taxpayers. Public safety building, tax dollars, and other funding mechanisms through the budget. So,
so the SRS will extend well past 23, is what you're saying?
Yes.
All right.
And no, there will be no impact for the individual taxpayer for this project because of SRS beyond 2023.
That's correct.
Okay. Yep.
And let me point out that SRS is locked in for 3 years now, and every 3 years it's brought back to Congress.
Oh.
And
okay.
There are so many rural congressmen and senators that are in favor of this,
uh-huh.
That it's been refunded since what, the 60s maybe?
Yeah.
Is that far back?
Yeah.
It's been a long time, and it's one of those things that they can go back to their constituents and go, look what I did for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it generally gets passed.
It's over 700 counties and boroughs depend on SRS.
So it's a big big win for them.
Yeah, it will not go away, I predict. Mm. Okay. So the third question is, with this, you know, obviously we're looking at these buildings and talking about the condition of them from a physical point of view. And so are our tourists. Okay. So you can fix the school, but does that wrap on around to Parks and Rec?
So that's a great question. So that it is a great question. Josh was kind of making this comment earlier. Well, that's the city's part of the building and not the school's, you know. So but we do have money, so we secured a grant this last fall from the loss. It's called the Local Government Lost Revenue Grant.
Yeah.
Part of that has been appropriated for a new garbage truck that's, you know, definitely needed.
And then the other portion of that, $175,000 to be exact, is appropriated for just addressing the pool siding specifically. So we have that funding secured and ready to go for the next construction cycle. So
maybe we can use the same guys.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Economies of scale.
And all those things have kind of been considered. So that's a great question. Mr. Wilson.
I guess, you know, you're talking about the expense of the condition survey. To do that to the schools, do you have any kind of estimate or any kind of idea?
Just a ballpark estimate, and it varies a lot by location and firm and all the different variables that can go into a condition survey. It's a very thorough process. We estimated for three schools it might be upwards of $400,000. But once we have spent that, we can use that condition survey for several years to apply for more grants. And if basically, if you don't do it, you won't rank high enough to get funded. If you look at all the rankings of the CIP major maintenance list, you can go down to maybe the last third, the first 30 all have condition surveys. And DEED will look at those and say, okay, did they have a condition survey? If they did, they'll give you points. If you didn't, you won't get the points, because DEED looks at what the engineers and the architects says, and they believe it. And they believe them because they have licenses and reputations at risk and liability attached to it. Anyone can go take the forms and do a condition survey, but I could go do it. But would they believe what I said? No, I don't have the right initials behind my name. So if I said that this roof needs to be replaced because it's structurally unsound, they would say, okay, good for you, and go on to the next application that had a real engineer and a real architect attached to it, who said, yes, this roof needs to be replaced because it's structurally unsound. And they would get the points, and my application wouldn't. So that's how important the condition surveys are. And they are a lot of money, but they're the basis for ranking your project.
So if I'm not mistaken, you guys mentioned earlier in regard to that question that the school has the money to cover that?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's something that we can take care of out of our own pocket and make what contribution we can to it.
Dave?
One of the biggest reasons why the school and the city is working together on what people may not understand is we all own those buildings. The city does. It's not the school and the city against each other, or we are one with all of these buildings. We own them. The school doesn't own the buildings. The city of Wrangell owns all those buildings. So it doesn't matter if it's a pool or the school or the public safety building, they're ours. So that's why we're all trying to collaborate everything together. Understood. And I don't really know if everybody knows that.
I don't think they do.
Understood. We got a good relationship with the school now more than ever, so it's been really fluid. So hoping to keep that alive and
we all go further if we all work together.
We all appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you guys all being here. No matter how you guys vote, you know, this isn't a pitch or anything like that. We just appreciate citizens that are asking the questions and concern. It just shows that you guys care. I look around the room and you got just a lot of variety of people here. Some just citizens, some hold positions here in Wrangell, and just really appreciate each and every one of you guys making it out and taking the time tonight. If you have any other questions, you can stick around, but I know it's getting later, and we're into fall, so it's getting dark out and people are getting sleepy. So you're welcome to head on out of here. But if you have any questions, please stick around. We'll all stick around and answer them. But thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate the recommendations too. So appreciate
the views. We really do appreciate the input. Yeah.